Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Allianz conference call on the financial results for the third quarter 2016. For your information, this conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to your host today, Mr. Oliver Schmidt, Head of Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Janik. Yeah, good afternoon from my side as well, and welcome to our conference call about the results of the third quarter 2016. There's nothing specific to be added from my side today, so I keep it brief and hand over directly to Dieter.
Yeah, thanks very much, Oliver, and also a good afternoon to everybody on the call, or good morning for the one who dialed in from the States. It's a great pleasure for me to present to you our Q3 results. When we start, as usual, using the presentation on page 3, operating profit of 2.9 billion really supported by all areas and in particular by the life and health segment, and I will then dive into the individual segments later on in the presentation. Shareholders' net income close to 1.9 billion euros, 36% up compared to a year ago, strong evidence of operating performance and also good financial market results. But also the revenue growth of 0.5% is translated into internal growth, that means adjusted for currency and other effects. 1.7% is a pretty good and strong result on an organic growth basis, here coming from P&C as well as our life segment. But let me first go a little bit deeper into the balance sheet. Increase in shareholders' equity of more than 2 billion, driven by unrealized gains and losses in fixed income and equity, retained earnings, but also consuming actually an increase in our pension liability, because the valuation rate for the pension liabilities is down to 1.3%, which is a clear evidence on how low interest rates in Europe got. And in this low-yield environment, we are defending our Solvency II ratio with 186% very strongly. And I think that the solvency ratio is really doing well with what you can see then on page 7, where we have detailed in the waterfall the own fund development and also the development of the risk or required solvency capital. Own funds is in the end pretty flat in development. The earnings are consumed by a little bit of market impact and some other changes. And the dividend capital management number, which is a positive, despite that we, of course, have accrued another 0.9 billion for the 50% payout ratio at year end, is positively influenced by the hybrid of 1.3 billion euros we raised in August. The capital requirement on the risk side is mainly driven by market impacts. Well, swap rates were down another 13%, but also equities up mean a more risk consumption of the equities by market value. Credit spread on BBB bonds was 20 base points down. That created actually a positive impact and not a negative. That means less capital consumption. But the change by EIOPA of the volatility adjuster formula and application has overall reduced our solvency ratio by 2%, and that is mainly in the SCR because we are applying the dynamic VA. Management action actually better hedging our investment result. You know, our interest rate sensitivity has reduced the risk by 0.3 billion, and that is also a reason what I have forgotten to mention on the previous page, that interest rate sensitivity came a little bit down further in the direction of our target. Overall, still a very good number, and before the question is being asked, Korea is still fully consolidated and included in the number. Now let's move to the P&C segment. As I said in the beginning, a strong underlying growth, 3%, half price, half of volume. And you are always concerned about that the underwriting cycle is getting weaker. Actually, when I look at the list of countries you see here on this page 9, only Italy and the large corporate business show a negative rate development. All others are in the positive, which is, I think, a very good evidence that the broadly diversified portfolio is on a good track, also deliver our midterm underwriting targets. And that leads me already to the operating profit of the P&C segment, 1.4 billion operating profit. Based on a good previous year underwriting result, still a little bit improvement with a 93.5 combined ratio, a little bit better expense ratio, but mainly a better loss ratio driven by a low net cat, a pretty normal large man-made losses, so it's actually falling in our long-term average. And weather-related is actually, I would say, medium level, not low and not particularly high. The normalized, or the runoff result, not the normalized, the runoff result is with 3%, a bit below our long-term average of 3.5 in the quarter, but still the 9 months figure is a little bit above our long-term average. So overall, attritional loss ratio very much comparable to 12 months ago, and I think on a good track for our future development. Let's then move to the breakdown into the individual countries. Well, not surprisingly, the combined ratio of the individual countries in particular, the large one, are pretty good, otherwise you are not getting to a 93.5 average. Latin America is now is the last place above 100, although we are seeing also here a movement in the right direction. Profitability, actually in Latin America we would have shown a positive operating profit, but we had a one-off booking on an old life book in runoff. We have from more than 10 years ago in Brazil still a life book in runoff. This is protection business where we have increased reserves. Otherwise, the operating profit would have been 5-6 million positive. So that means for the quarters to come, also Latin America could return to a positive. I think it is overall a very good development in the numbers. So investment income in P&C, well, the running interest income falling parallel to the yield environment we are living in, no surprise. But what we show under net harvesting and other was a year ago a negative number driven by FX losses and other derivative losses. So this year a small positive. So that is actually the swing factor which allows us to have a better total investment income than a year ago. So it was also in this aspect with 10 plus, just above normal quarter, but nothing negative. turning into the life business, our execution of the new business strategy continues to play out very well. When you look at the contribution of the various business classes, we move in the right direction and are able to deliver overall a strong new business margin with 2.8. But not only that, we move in mix in the right direction. When you look at the little table on the right-hand side, the PVNBP is up by 8%. That means also sales is growing with the right product mix. So I think our life story continues to be a real success story, and the real success story is also falling down to bottom line. 1129 is a very strong operating profit for the quarter. We have a higher investment margin in the quarter, and then there is a positive impact from the base risk in on the old VA block in our U.S. life business, plus good growth in our U.S. life business. So that are the drivers of our operating profit increase. Is 1129 a reasonable number to use this as basis for future quarters? We would normalize the number more at 950 million. That means the investment margin, which in the number here included is 98 base points. We would normalize more to 90, and then we would correct for the base risk and then some other small figures. So overall, it would be 950 plus in the future years, whatever you have in growth on the size of liabilities, that would, of course, then dynamically develop the figure into the future. So that is the life result in total. Page 21, value of new business, 318 million, very much on last year's level, because last year we had even a slightly better new business margin, but that was at a substantially higher interest rate level. So in light of the today's interest rate level, I think we are defending the value of new business very strongly, and you can see that actually Germany is the main driver of it. The U.S. is fairly low in the third quarter because the fixed index annuity business is very sensitive to the 10-year treasury rate. That means when we look at the screens today, we are probably now back to the good new business margin in the 3% category, because the U.S. 10-year is back to 2.2%, where in the summer at the low point was at 1.4, 1.3, so that makes a huge difference. But on top, we had taken end of the quarter measurements to improve the profitability. So the U.S. Would have been, even with unchanged interest rates, also show better new business margin in the last quarter. So overall, a broad contribution from many countries, and I think overall doing well. Page 23 is a detailed presentation of the investment margin. I think I gave already the more relevant information. So annualized 98 margin in the quarter, and that means 25 base points for the quarter specifically, and normalized for the quarter 2-3 base points, or 3 base points down. So that leads me to the asset management business, which is, I think, completing the positive stories of the quarter. PIMCO is reporting for the quarter net inflows of 4.7 billion euros. the October also ended with a positive number. So I feel that our prediction we did already almost a year ago. Yeah, actually in last year in the third quarter presentation, I said that we are expecting small positive flows for the second half of 16, and I think that statement is at the moment being on track. I can't tell you what will happen at year end. There is now a big shift in the US also in how the market views future developments. So therefore, it would be a bit too naive to say that we can exactly say what is happening. But I think PIMCO is on a good track to have overcome the problems from 3 years ago and are back as a well-recognized great platform and asset manager. We have also placed over the last months two private funds where we have quite some billions of committed dollars to invest, but they will only show up as inflows when the money is being called from the investors. AUM in total up, besides the inflows, a good help from the market. FX did a little bit spoil the story. And I should not forget to mention that also Allianz Global Investors had another very good quarter with plus 1.5 billion, which then translates also into a good revenue development overall. Allianz Global Investors growing revenues, baseline as well as performance fees. And PIMCO, well, still suffering from the outflows of the last 12 months, but I think we see a pretty stable fee margin. Allianz Global Investors, I should say that the dilution of the fee margin has, of course, something to do with the Rogge acquisition and then all the changes I explained already in previous quarters on mix in business. So when we come to the operating profit, a small positive compared to last year, which is a very good development compared to the previous presentations I did. Cost income ratio, a sharp improvement on both sides. PIMCO with 57, I think that is a very good number. And Allianz Global Investors going to 67.3 and delivering 150 million operating profit is a great step forward to really becoming more and more important in our asset management segment. Now, corporate segment, actually nothing special, normal, I would say, noise in the numbers, nothing really to mention, so that we can just have a short look at the net income. 2.9 billion operating profit, non-operating items pretty small, driven by 220 million realized gains, small impairments, so that we end up with 2.8 pre-tax income and 30% taxes, which is the tax rate this quarter without any special elements. It is just in all countries the normal tax rates applied, so that we end net with 1.855 billion for the shareholders, which is I think a very good number and makes me confident that we can deliver for the year end an outlook of 10.5 billion operating profit, with probably also a good number for net income. When I look at the 2015 net income we delivered for the full year, then our 9 months figure at the moment is 78% of last year's full year profit. So that means we have good chances for year end to come out with a nice net income figure. And here I would stop and open for questions, because I think that is probably a better use of our time.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Our first question comes from James Shook from UBS. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. Hi, Dieter. I had three questions, please. Firstly, just on the change in the VA reference portfolio, you think you said two in the presentation. It seems to be one on the actual bridge. It's a much lower kind of impact than one might have expected. If you could just explain a little bit about the change of reference portfolio, why it had such a limited impact, particularly to the dynamic element of the VA. I kind of link to that, if I compare the sensitivities, because you're the first to disclose the updated sensitivities on the new reference portfolio, and there's been some big changes going on in terms of the different sensitivities. So in particular, your sensitivity to government bonds has more than doubled, and you're now showing zero sensitivity to corporate bonds. If you could just explain that bridge to me a little bit, and kind of in the same vein, I mean, what does this mean for how you actually manage your Solvency II ratio going forward, if kind of overnight we've had such a big change in the perceived volatility? My second question is a shorter one, just around potential modeling changes to the Solvency II ratio itself. I think earlier this year, you talked about things you could do to refine the treatment of negative rates, and that might have a positive impact. Could you just help quantify your visibility on that going into next year, and any other things you might be contemplating? And then finally, around the combined ratio in the third quarter, so 93.5 headline, obviously there's a low level of nat cats in the period. There's a level of PYD that's broadly in line with where you would want it to be. And then you have large losses. Could you just give an indication of kind of what the normalized underlying level is and how that compares with the below 94 that you're targeting for 2018, please?
Okay, James, so thank you for your question. Let's first start with the VA reference portfolio. There is, in the update of the reference portfolio, is one change, which you could say is normal procedure, and then there is one change where we are at the moment still struggling a bit, but we have applied it. So the first change is, yes, EIOPA analyzed how people are invested and shifted the reference portfolio more to corporate bonds, so less government bonds, more corporate bonds. Okay, that's fine. But also they added in their reference portfolio, at least that is how we read it, the assets of the unit-linked business, and concluded that this is not interest rate sensitive, which is correct. But the consequence for the VA is that they reduced implicitly the application ratio if you calculate it through, the application ratio fall from 65% to 46%. That is the indirect impact of enlarging the reference portfolio with unit-linked business, where I am at the moment still struggling why you would at all consider unit linked. And you are right. The new sensitivities and the big shift came to all of us as a surprise. It's a very hard what you can do. You can certainly not adjust your investment portfolio after you have read the paper. However, it is in the end confirming our long-term strategy to go more into corporate credit and reduce government bonds. The sensitivities you can read in a way that we are still too long in govies and too short in corporate bonds, and that we need further to balance. That is what the sensitivities say. And whether the volatility adjuster reference portfolio, whether this unit link business stays in it or not, I don't know yet. But actually, I hope that we can have still a discussion there with all the regulators and see and more understand what is the idea behind it. Model changes, there will be nothing happening end of the year. I would expect that the model changes is more coming in Q1 17. And maybe what I should have mentioned on the volatility adjuster, it overall dropped 8 base points, of which 6 was roughly to market changes in the credit spreads, and 2.5 base points is the change coming from the new formula of EIOPA. So when this helps you. So in general, model changes before Q1, nothing. And I would expect that on all the model changes we have applied for, there might be a small positive overall, but not. That means a few points and nothing too dramatic. The combined ratio 93.5, what is our normalized combined ratio? Well, I thought I mentioned that the large losses are included in Q3 are roughly at normal level with some 4%. When you normalize it completely, where would you put it? I think to get to our 94 target in 2018, we have still to go for another, well, around 50 base points, maybe plus minus. But I think we are on a good development path that we get to our 94 target.
On the point about how you manage the Solvency II ratio. I mean, obviously, the sensitivities haven't changed so much, and you have a target level for your capital. I mean, what does that mean for actually how you address that volatility?
We will further see how we can shorten certainly spread sensitivities. That is what we have to look at. And obviously, what is showing up more and more is this over-focus on Solvency II, on credit spread development, is probably not the right approach for long-term investors.
No. Okay, thanks for that, Dieter.
Okay, thanks for James.
We will now take our next question from Farooq Hanif from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, everybody. Thank you very much. Three questions also, actually. First one, if you take out the performance fees and asset management, then your cost-income ratio is still down. So there's a real good nominal reduction. But Q3 tends to be kind of obviously very much lower than Q4. So just wanted to get your sense of the path of cost now and what you're targeting and how quickly you'll get there. Second question is on the performance fees. You gave some kind of guidance about private funds and private equity-related business that had performance fees coming. I was wondering if you could give us another sort of bit of outlook on what you think is special that's going to come in the next couple of years. And lastly, could you comment on the Italian pricing where it was weak in P&C? Just what you're seeing in terms of pricing in motor and non-motor. Thank you.
Okay. So let's start with Italian pricing. It's still in motor, from our perspective, slightly softening, but the speed of softening is going down, and it might go a little bit better. In the non-motor business, we don't see any negative price trends. I think it is a little bit up, but nothing very, very special. Also in commercial, I think we are holding up. It is more the motor liability business, which is still under pressure. And I think that is pretty much in line with also the result presentation of the two large peers, which also came out yesterday and today. So that means when you add the three up, you have some 80% of the motor market in Italy. I think we are holding up in profitability still quite well. And I assume that we will see sooner or later the turning point also for Italian rates, and then people need to turn it back to higher rates. Taking out the performance fees, we have still an improvement of the cost-income ratio year over year, actually still some 3.8%, if we are not mistaken. So that is a good number. I cannot give you a performance fee outlook for 17, but you should really consider that it is from the closed funds, but it is also from very normal institutional mandates. And PIMCO has actually also a sizable hedge fund business, which we should not forget, which also lives on performance fees. What can I say about 2017? Well, November 1, that means a good week ago, Manny Roman joined as CEO. He is at the moment, well, I would say, putting his office in place and really trying to understand PIMCO's business in all details, and I think it is fair when we give him some days or months actually to learn how the business works, and then comes with a proposal where do we have the best opportunity from our current strong position to get even stronger.
Okay, thank you very much.
Did I cover everything, Farouk?
Yes, you did. Thank you so much.
We will now take our next question from Paul Diaz from RBC. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi there. A couple of questions if I can. Firstly, just looking at the Department of Labour changes, a couple of points here. Firstly, has anything changed on your view in terms of the impact on the life business of changes? But also, do you see any impact on PIMCO from the upcoming changes? Or indeed, as I read earlier today, do you think that the new president might well cancel them, and therefore it's all been a somewhat fruitless exercise? That's kind of question one. And then the second point, just looking at the life business, is you're guiding again to the sort of, ongoing normalized level of investment margin at 90 basis points for the year. I mean, going forward, given that the shift to the new types of business has been so strong, and the investment margin on that business is broadly double what it is on the sort of traditional savings business, do you see the opportunity for that to grow over time, or do you think the sort of the underlying lower investment return environment is going to counteract that, and 90 basis points is kind of an ongoing target? Thanks.
Thank you, Paul. It's actually good that you asked the question about the investment margin. Obviously, I did not say it precisely enough. I'm not guiding to an average new business investment margin of 90 basis points for the full year. I'm guiding to the 90 basis points as the expected number for a quarter. But what we have in the bank, we have in the bank. That is quite a different statement. So it is my expectation for a new quarter without knowing anything would be that we make the 90 basis points, and then we see end of the quarter whether the volatility allows us to be a little bit higher or a little bit lower. That is how I want it to be interpreted. So DOL, yeah, that is a mystery, and the mystery is certainly not getting easier with the recent developments in the U.S. First, in asset management and life, we are fully working on being prepared when DOL rule starts. However, we are still all a little bit struggling with the interpretation. And when you look at the large broker-dealer networks in the States, well-known brand names, they have taken opposite directions, actually, how they deal with the rule. That shows you that there is still a lot of uncertainty around how to go for it. So that is how is best advice working? Do you have to do? Can you only do fee business? And any first year commissions are being seen as not good enough as advice. So there are different interpretations at the moment, and there is a lot of uncertainty around it, where we assumed it would be clarified over the next months. Now, with Republicans in control in all three key positions, so to speak, Congress, Senate, and President, yes, there is now I think the possibility that things are changing, and when I look at the stock markets the last 2 days, the market seems to know more about it, but as an industry representative, I would say too early to say, and let's wait what is going to happen.
Okay, great, thanks.
We will now take our next question from Thomas Seil from Bernstein. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, thank you. Good afternoon. First question is on life. Quite impressed you grew the share of life businesses above 10 from 34 to 75%. I look at Western Europe. It's particularly interesting you have flat operating income, but the ROE for the segment rises from 7.9 to 10.6 quarter on quarter. So I'm assuming you have also done some capital action to boost the ROE, and I just wonder if you could get some color here, what exactly you have done to get this strong ROE improvement in Western Europe and in France in particular, where ROE doubled. Yeah. Second question, could you give us an update on the Asian life disposals? It has been a bit quiet on that one. We've heard peers have sold Korean life businesses. So where are we here on the process? Can we still expect a closing Q4. And finally, I think 2.5 billion is what you have in the M&A budget. You basically said this morning that cost is the biggest, hurdle to do M&A. For sure, the price level doesn't change for the rest of the year. What keeps you basically announcing the buyback, that is the, you know, indirect consequence of not doing M&A?
Look, well, thank you for the question, Thomas. I think our let's start with the life ROE improvements. We have a nice increase in France and the operating profit and net income. Hence, also the ROE is stronger. We are working with every country, as I explained last time, to get ready for the sustainable 10% ROE target by 2018. Some will be a bit earlier, some will be, I think, then only in 18. So therefore, it should not surprise you that the numbers are getting better, because we are really continuously working with all the markets on this question. So there is a mixture, and I can only repeat what I said last time. There is certainly capital actions being taken, but also improvement of the underlying operating results, and both together should then, for the whole Western European portfolio, bring us in the right direction. Korea closing. Yes, fourth quarter is our anticipation. It is besides formalities, that means regulator saying yes and giving a green light, there is nothing else open. I think both parties have done everything what the regulator asked for and have delivered everything, and all documents are clean and in good shape. So we can now only wait for the official approval. And with the M&A budget, the latest day is when we announce our year-end results. Then you will know when and how we have dealt with the M&A budget. But I can only tell you we are completely sticking to our promise. That means it is M&A or share buyback, not used for anything else.
So if we don't hear by year end about M&A, we basically can conclude the buyback is coming.
Yeah, would be one version, yes.
And then on the RE, sorry, one follow-up question here. You know, with this lower equity consumption, e.g. in France, you know, why do we not see more benefits on the economic capital side? I would have expected that if you get France more capital efficient, you get some impact on group capital, but it's not visible here.
I think for this we need to change even more. That is also in the doing and making. That is not being completed in 16. That will happen more in 17 and 18. But it is a very good question and good observation.
Okay, that means the capital impact is yet to come. Yeah.
Further on, yes.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, Dieter.
We will now take our next question from Vinit Malhotra from Mediobanca. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thanks. Good afternoon. Just one question on PIMCO, please, Dieter. So, is it a fair assumption that the institutional mandates are now sort of under control, and is possible that we assume that the pressure on that side of the outflows is now abated and is expected to remain like this? So just some more color, please, would help there. And second, just one very quick clarification, sort of. Thanks for clarifying again on the VA change by IOPA. Is it a fair understanding then that IOPA is now able to direct the industry's asset allocation? Because it should have been the other way around, but it seems that with you moving and IOPA controlling so much through its VA reference portfolio, is it a fair understanding that they are now controlling where assets go? Or is it too much of a statement here? Just want your thoughts. Thanks.
Okay. Good afternoon, Vinit. Let's start with EIOPA. Well, in the end, it is a mutual process because the reference portfolio they have used is really from the market data they collected in Europe, so that more seems that in the market data that our portfolio had obviously still a bit more government bonds than the average, which actually still surprised me a bit, but I think I have to accept it when this is an EIOPA statistic.
Sorry.
On PIMCO, yes. We have fairly stable inflows on all the funds and strategies people like, and that has really is on a good level quite over some quarters now. I think the institutional decisions are, yes, under control is maybe not a good point when you are in a client service business. We are servicing clients and not controlling them. But some of these mandates got also cancelled because the people just needed cash. And can I predict who needs cash? That is very difficult to say, and therefore we feel comfortable, and in general the acceptance of the existing clients and the satisfaction with what PIMCO is doing is high, and that gives us I think the confidence that today's development in the third quarter was not only by chance.
Sure. And Dieter, can I just, you know, the reinvestment rate in PNC, for example, went down 30 bps in the third quarter versus second quarter. Is that somehow linked to this portfolio change from you had to do for EIOPA?
It's 10 base points underlying 20 credits.
Oh, okay.
Pretty much how the market moved in the quarter.
Fair enough. All right. Thanks, Dieter.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. And if you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. We will now take our next question from William Hawkins from KBW. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hello, Dieter. Just a small numbers one. On slide 7, the roll forward of own funds, the $1.1 billion from the life business, could you just try to help me understand the breakdown of that figure? In the past, you've guided that the in-force runoff is about $900 million. And if I were to add $400 or so for pre-tax new business, that would apply some negative operating variances. But it may be that the $900 million is the wrong starting point for in-force runoff. So could you just give a bit of color about how that $1.1 breaks down, please? Thank you.
Will, thank you. It is the expected business contribution as this quarter only 600 or a bit more. So with 400 new business value, you get to the 1.1, but that was obviously for you already easy to see. The 600 has actually some small variance still included. I think we assumed before that we would probably see more ongoing contribution also from a positive experience that might have been a little bit too optimistic when we said 800, but I think we will see the next quarter. Where are we again? That number is maybe a little bit weaker this quarter, despite all the positive numbers we have in the overall result. And it will also not be fully stable.
That's correct. Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Michael Hunter from JP Morgan. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. Great numbers. Really great numbers. Woo. You must be happy. I suppose really the question I have is there anything really which worries you in all this? Because everything seems so good. So, but in a detailed manner, the US NAIC proposal, pricing in German motor, I don't know if, is it, how do you see this developing, particularly versus claims? And the US NAIC, I suppose the bigger question is, what would the solvency look like at year end given what we know today? So interest rates, potentially career, accretion of earnings. Why didn't you raise your target guidance? So 8 billion at 9 months, the run rate looks like 2.7, so we'd be at 10.7. There looks to be a few good luck factors coming through on performance fees at PIMCO, so yeah, so I was just wondering a little bit. I suppose it's a question of my colleagues, competitors asked, but I'm getting very slow these days. When we met with one of your colleagues in Germany at the end of June, he explained that Allianz Leben profits are coming down, which means the dividend coming from Allianz Leben will also come down. And but then with these fantastic new numbers on the new products, there's obviously going to be the old business decline will be offset by this new stuff. I just wondered if you can give a feel for when Allianz Leben profits might grow again thanks to all this new business. Sorry if it's too many questions.
Yes, Michael, indeed, that is a long list of questions. So let me start in the order you asked it. So NAIC proposal, we look pretty relaxed to it. All the testing we have done on the current proposal, it changes our capital requirement in the U.S. almost not. It's really rounding, I would say. So therefore, we are relaxed. I personally think it would give a fairer comparison between the fixed index annuity writer and the VA writer, and any fair comparison across the market I'm always appreciating, and it would certainly be good for the fixed index annuity specialists. So my worries, yeah, well, actually the share price is still too low. And why did we not change the guidance? Well, probably we are more a humble German company. So I think that the 10.5 is a pretty good number. Some of your colleagues questioned over the summer whether we would make it. I think we are well set and can reconfirm our 10.5 outlook. And that is what we want to do. German rates in motor, yes, the increases are not as strong anymore as they were, but still, I think, very sustainable figures, in particular, a good combined ratio. And in the German life business, I think we have tested and verified that we can keep in our German life business the margin, the profit margin, very stable, and hence the profit overall will grow with the underlying business. That means that the reserves grow some maybe 4-5% a year, then the profit would at stable margin do the same.
Wow, that's fantastic. Okay, lovely. Thank you so much and congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We will now take our next question from Sami Taipalus from Bernberger. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Afternoon, everyone. Thanks for taking my question. The first one really just is on the P&C pricing. There was quite a nice uptick, about 1 percentage point in Q3 versus Q2. and I'm wondering if you could just give a little bit of detail of where that came from. And I think at Q2 you said pricing is running roughly in line with claims inflation. Do you think pricing is running ahead of claims inflation now? So that's the first question. Second question is a bit more philosophical on the Solvency II ratio. You've taken a number of actions over the last few quarters as the ratio has kind of approached the 180 range to, I suppose, to keep the ratio up. I wonder if you would have taken these actions had you not had the adverse market movement that that you've had, and whether, you know, your target range is influencing your investment decisions and hedging decisions there. And I'm obviously not talking about the Korea sale here, but more about hedges and various tweaks you've made to the investment portfolios. Thank you.
Thank you, Sami. I think in general I would still, outside Italy, saying CNC pricing is in line with inflation. There are some positive aspects. I think there is certainly Spain, there is Australia, and maybe in some pockets also the UK, where I would make a different point that it is actually getting better. Overall, a little bit more positive picture. The quarter-over-quarter comparison are a bit tricky because you are not renewing every quarter the same business. The mixes in each quarter are very specific. It depends on which markets have strong renewal dates in the summer, on year end, or after 9 months. So therefore you have really quite a mixture, and I would not look at roll forward from Q2 to Q3. In the end, you have only, we do the Q3 comparison. There we can say that is roughly the same mix as a year ago, because that renews then according to local market practice. So that conclusion is a bit more difficult, but I would say in general it looks a little bit better than when we discussed the same question 6 months ago. The Solvency II management action, I think we would have taken some of them without the market movement, because it is just a better use of risk capital. Otherwise, we are always trying also to allow risk taking to make money. So we are not de-risking just for the de-risking. It is a dynamic movement backward and forward, because in the end, the capital has to work and create returns. So therefore, we will be always be dynamic in our management actions. Some of them which clearly improve things and not harm returns, we would do anyway, and we will do some of them going forward. But on asset allocation, we are flexible.
Okay, great. So does that mean that if market movements sort of went your way, we should expect some of the actions that you've taken to unwind and go the other way?
Yeah, well, we for example, always look at our equity exposures, how we run it. That is constantly being be updated. There is certainly not a stable number. There is on one hand the equity portfolio, but on the other hand, we move puts, we use also futures, either to expand risk or to reduce risk. That is just depending on the specific situation. For sure, at the moment, when you look at Euroswap 20 is some almost 50 base points higher than beginning of the quarter. We have seen an unbelievable volatility in interest rates in the last 2 weeks.
Okay, thanks very much.
We will now take our next question from John Hacking from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead, your line is open.
afternoon, everybody. I've got two questions, please. First of all, inflation. I wonder whether you could what level of general inflation you've got baked into your P&C reserves in the sort of big geographic buckets, and whether your view about inflation is changing from a pricing of new business perspective. Indicator which is basically driving the growth and the outflows. Thank you.
John, could you repeat your last question because you are cutting in and off? Your microphone was not really easy.
Sorry,
to
Dieter. Is that better?
That's much better.
Okay. Yeah, sorry. So the second question was around PIMCO. So I just wondered if you could give us a little bit of colour about the types of products that are driving the inflows and also the residual outflows. Thank you.
Okay. So your inflation question. We are analyzing in each market and each line of business the average past 5-year inflation, and then we do adjustments for step changes in the market more to the conservative side. When we see upswing, when it goes down, we are probably stick to our slower moving 5-year average number. So that is how we handle it. Therefore, to say what general inflation is baked in, it is very formulaic and very precise on each business. As you know, when a line of business is driven by medical inflation, then you get to different numbers than what Draghi is looking at when he is calculating the inflation for Europe. When he would use medical inflation, we would be at a different interest rate level. We had very clearly at PIMCO the shift in products is continuing. It is not new. I think since I reported here as CFO my first quarter in 2013, we spoke about already that the old core products of PIMCO around the total return fund losing in importance, and all the other products, income, global credit, etc., are growing in importance. And that trend actually continues. We had more than 7 billion net inflows in this newer product generation, and around the total return fund type of strategies, we still have outflows, but that is not surprising. And we had also a positive on the mutual fund side, and I think it is also geographically very, very mixed, where we are probably still stronger in Asia and Europe and less in the U.S.
Thank you. Can I just ask a follow-up? I know it's very early days, but if the curve steepness we've seen in the U.S. over the last few days persists, do you think that product mix is going to continue, or would you expect to see different products come to prominence?
Well, that is in the end now the crystal ball question. I think that is much too early to make any statements about it. But it seems from a macro view that interest rate, the long end of the interest rates are going more up, and inflation could return in the U.S. faster. Actually, when you look at the spread curve between 10-year and 2-year treasury, that means look how steep is the interest rate curve. That is clearly rising already over the last 2 months. That is not an effect from this Tuesday. It is already a trend for now more than 2 months that the curve is steepening. That has certainly accelerated in the last days. So that means people are seeing a recovery of the long-term rates. What impact does this have on all the asset management products? I believe as a active fixed income player, we are very well positioned to service the needs of our U.S. customers and elsewhere very well.
Excellent. Thank you, Dieter.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We will now take our next question from Andrew Ritchie from Autonomous. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Oh, hi there. Just two quick questions. First of all, could you just clarify what it was when you changed the modeling of the new business value of the capital efficient guaranteed products? The margin went up there. You cited a model change for Germany. What are the sort of features that you've modeled better or reappreciated that drove that? The second question, in the second quarter, Dieter, you kind of expressed the view that to hit your targets in non-life, you may have to look a bit more at expenses and efficiency because you were seeing a bit more margin erosion than maybe you thought. I mean, it sounds like there's been a complete sea change on that in Q3. You're now much more confident. Is that a fair comment? I mean, I'm struggling to see why pricing's really picked up. I know you mentioned a few markets where pricing is harder, but those are markets that are also seeing the most inflation. So maybe just clarify, is there a real sea change, or is it just that this is just a normalization and maybe you were a bit too pessimistic in Q2? Thanks.
Well, Andrew, let me start with the combined ratio question. I still think, and that is unchanged, that the expense ratio needs to improve and support the development, even when now rate changes are a bit more helpful than we thought. I'm not sure that this is stable enough that you can fully rely on it for the year 2018. And when it doesn't work out with the rate changes, you cannot start in July 2018 to work on your expenses to make a target. So therefore, what I said before, what we are doing operationally is completely unchanged. So we have to work on the expense ratio, and that is clearly a must-do. So the new business margin change, very simple. We had in our model, which was also approved by the regulator for the Solvency II model, which we also, as we run everything integrated, new business margin and everything, we had not modeled in our new business margin the reset option on the annuity phase. So we have in the end modeled our new products in the German old system like the traditional products. And the shortened duration and the reset of the guarantee and conversion interest rate at annuity phase was left out, and that makes a huge difference that moves in the end the new business margin for the whole German new business from 2.8 to 4.2.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Because this new business makes now in retail 90% of the whole.
I thought that was one of the reasons why it was more profitable already because of the change in the nature of the guarantee, but I hadn't realized
It was already more profitable because it had lower guarantees. That was in the model, but not this more complicated reset option, which was not in the old system foreseen, and that is pretty complex to get it into the model, and then through the approval with the BaFin is not yet there. So actually, we are disclosing for the new business margin something which we have not yet in the Solvency II calculation included because the BaFin and other regulators in Europe approval is still missing.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Nick Holmes from Société Générale. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Oh, hi there. Thank you very much. I had a couple of questions on life. First of all, returning to the DOL, I noticed that your hybrid variable annuity products are selling extremely strongly. I wondered if you could give us a bit more color on what these are. Are these sort of DOL friendly? Are they fee-based? What sort of guarantees are you offering, stuff like that? And then secondly, also on life, I noticed that you took some pretty big DAC true-ups, positive true-ups in the US and France, I think. I wondered if you could basically just give us a bit more color what's going on. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Nick. The true-ups in the US is just a consequence of the normal formulas. When the base risk is positive, that means when you judge the ratio between past and future earnings, you adjust formulae like the DAC, that is the normal true-up. In France, similar, and then I think also in Germany we had DAC true-ups, but that is in the end the formula depending on the profits. In the US, we are developing the DOL-friendly hybrids for next, but they are not yet in place. What is doing more is the index-based VA business, and that is certainly growing slowly, and you can, of course, call this also a DOL-friendly, because when you have a passive fund as the underlying in your variable annuity product, then of course the best interest advice has one hurdle less to pass. That is quite obvious.
Right, that's very interesting. Can I just ask on the DAC true-up, is the positive variance policyholder behavior assumptions, or would it be market performance? I'm just wondering what's actually driving the positive outcome against your assumptions.
No, you have what I said. The DAC level which you keep is determined by the ratio for a policy, what profit will emerge in the future, what profit emerged already in the past. So it is in the end a ratio. Future profits divided by past profits for a single policy or a single group of policies, and then you compare this with the DAC to be amortized in the future versus the past, and that ratio is the same. So that is very simple how DAC works in the life insurance industry. And as the profit stream is not stable, you have in the end two moving parts here which are then being aligned. And usually we are not doing this every quarter, so we are usually doing this on four quarters rolling, because otherwise everybody would constantly recalculate everything. And the third quarter is where most of our OEs do this calculation. And then it can come from everything. I think here in the VA book in the US, that is market-driven. That was positive base risk development by and large, but then it can also be changes in lapse assumption, mortality, whatever, but it is mainly just the actual developments which is the driver and not assumption changes about the future.
That's very clear. So it's a mix of market and better policyholder behavior than you
assume. Or not at all, yeah, because you just said less profit now and more in the future, or the other way around. It is very, very different.
That's great. Thank you very much, Dieter.
Thank you.
We will now take our next question from James Shuck from UBS. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thanks for taking my follow-up. Sorry for the data, but I just want to return to the sensitivity on the credit spreads, in particular between the two periods, because the change in the reference portfolio actually reduced the weighting of corporate credit in the reference portfolio. And all other things being equal, that should lower the benefit that you get from the dynamic volatility adjuster. So I'm struggling to see why in Q2 you showed for a 100 basis point reduction, increase in credit spreads that had a 10-point impact on your Solvency II ratio, why with less of a benefit you would now show zero impact from wider credit spreads.
The share of corporates got bigger, so that means you are actually getting, relative to our portfolio, more on corporates. The VA reference portfolio, the share on government bonds did fell more, and on corporates less, and that shifted the combination.
My understanding was that the government, we could take this offline if you like, but the government weighting went from 38 to 27 and the other went from 48 to 44. So I don't see why there would be a benefit to you in the sensitivity, but maybe we take it offline. It's probably better.
Maybe we take it offline.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We will now take our next question from Nicolo Dalla Palma from BNP Paribas. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon. My first question is on the motor business across Europe, because in the last few quarters in the U.S., we have the focus has been on the increased repair costs on one side and some pickup in the frequency that is moving quicker than the actual traffic. So just wanted to get your views on whether you're seeing anything similar across the European book by and large, not specifically in one country, or whether it's not really a topic on the European side, even though it may be temporary anyway. And the second question is a follow-up on Andrew's question regarding the model change around the reset option for the German annuity products. You mentioned that it's not yet included in solvency. Can you quantify what the benefit would be of including that calculation in solvency, or is that too early? Thanks.
Okay, so on the motor business across Europe, this repair situation in the U.S. is not visible. The movements in motor claims in Europe is very much dependent on bodily injuries. There was the table changes in Spain this year. Then also in Germany, when we see movements at all, it is much more bodily injury. There is certainly an upcoming question for the whole industry is how much bodily injuries are we seeing in future based on smartphone use during driving? That is not a joke. That is certainly a question, because we have seen over years, due to the technical progress in the cars, that bodily injuries are going down in frequency. That is coming to a stop. You still see it in the expensive cars. So when you look at cars 60,000 euro and more, there is still a reduction in large claims. However, when you look at the less expensive cars, then there is really the question what drives increases in frequency. And then I would say playing with the toys during driving is certainly a very serious topic. So on the model changes, we will probably see some positive impact and also a little bit better interest rate sensitivity from the new model. The new model contains more changes than just mapping the new products correctly. So the new business value is certainly supported. That means you have also a more positive development in own fund. What the new model will certainly support is that over the long run, our produced solvency over consumed solvency by new business in Germany will improve further. That means the 5-year and 10-year outlook is much stronger also in solvency terms. Of course, that assumes then always that interest rates stay stable over the whole time. So I think that were your two questions.
Yep. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad.
Okay, thank you very much. Then I wish you all a great rest of the Friday and a great weekend. Thank you for listening in.
Thank you from my side as well. Bye-bye.
That will conclude today's conference call, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.